Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Sports Grid Fantasy Football Podcast. My name is Davis Maddock, continuing our series of bringing on industry-leading dynasty fantasy football analysts. We've had, Curtis Patrick on. We've had a lot of Ryan McDowell on. A lot of A-plus guests. But we had to really bring it to the top. My buddy, Lord Reeves, Rich Rebar, sharpfootball.com. We're in some leagues together, some dynasty leagues together. And, we're in a very similar situation in the DFB league. I believe we both have 3 first round picks this year.
Yeah, I think I actually have 4. I kind of built my team differently in that league than a lot of the teams, because that league is, it was a startup last year, but kind of knowing what your opponents are and what they're going to do. And that league was started with a bunch of season-long players. Not a lot of people had dynasty backgrounds, DFS, a lot of DFS crew. And I really thought last year a lot of people would come into that draft with a win-now approach. And, there'd be a lot of people, the majority of the league would be drafting from that stance. So I was really worried from a stance of taking that approach myself, which I typically do. I try to win right out of the gate. But I altered that because I thought really like eight of the 12 teams for sure would be going for last year. And I just didn't want to get cut off, in the draft. So I thought I would go a different route and kind of built for this year plus and acquired a bunch of picks and moved down. I didn't take a skill player over 27 years old in that draft last year. The only guy over 27 years old is my quarterbacks in that league. So I kind of built myself up for this year more. And I actually had a really good rookie draft, for it being that draft takes place before the rookie draft.
It takes place in between the combine and before the NFL draft. Yeah,
but I actually hit on a lot of my picks. My only real dud was N'Keal Harry, but I got Marquise Brown in the second round, and he ended up being the wide receiver one in that draft. I drafted Terry McLaurin. Like, I had a lot of hits. I had Darius Slayton. Like, I had a lot of hits. Year one that I'll be able to roll over into this year. So I'm looking forward to this year, because it's kind of what I planned for, was acquiring picks in this draft, which ended up being a good draft like we expected it to be, even with the loss of like Chuba Hubbard and Travis Etienne. Like, it's still a really deep class, and it looks objectively good on paper, much better than last year's. So I was excited to kind of build that. So I'm excited to see what we're going to get, going forward this year. But I took a different approach than everyone kind of in the startup.
So I think a big thing for rookie drafts right now is thinking about the tier break. So do you agree that in regular leagues, the first tier is the 2 wide receivers, Judy and Lamb, and the 4 four running backs, Cam Akers, DeAndre Swift, Jonathan Taylor, and J.K. Dobbins, and then in super flex leagues, adding Burrow and Tua into that?
Yeah, objectively, I think that's where it lies. I still need to see the league value Akers, I think, as much as we all do. And I'm in that boat. I actually have Akers he scores objectively right in that bucket of guys. But I haven't really seen Akers as linked from the draft Nick crowd that are wired in, him getting drafted as highly as the other 3 guys. So if he gets that kind of capital and is in that second, if he gets drafted in the second round, then we'll have, I think he vaults into that tier. But if he's not, I think he's going to be kind of he'll fall down to the secondary tier outside of those guys. We just need to see the investment. I haven't seen him get as much run as the top 3 guys like we've seen. But he actually, in my model, and stuff, he scores better than Swift to me, on that stance.
That's because Swift didn't do anything.
I mean, Swift is – he doesn't have, a Josh Jacobs-like profile. And if you look at his game log, DeAndre Swift's, it shows that he is a workhorse. He just had, a really, cattywampus, distribution. So the first 3 games, Georgia won their first 3 games 148-23 combined.
So that's for those following at home, that's a lot of points to win by.
So, he played, Murray State, and he had, 6 touches. He just didn't – they didn't have to play him, 2 of the first 3 games. But if you look at, his game log where they played full games and they were competitive games, he was a workhorse. And then he hurt his shoulder at the end of the year. And he was active the last 2 games, but only, I think, he had 2 touches and 1 touch. On a per-game basis, those games he was active, and they don't really carry over in terms of raw stats. But if you look at the games where they were competitive, he was a workhorse and productive in those games. Not to the levels of his other guys. But I still think he belongs there. He is that good of a back, for me.
Well, he's really good at catching passes. If we want to go to the tape, That dude, I mean, like, if you, I mean, just if you see him, bro, if you see him, he is extremely good at catching passes. But I think Dobbins is too.
So is Akers, too. And Akers is a really good pass catcher. So, I mean, all those guys fit the bill. And even though, you know, Jonathan Taylor doesn't have, like, 4-year resume, I mean, he had a higher percent of his team's receptions this year than all those guys. You know, you say, oh, he only had 26 catches out the door. But, I mean, it was still a higher rate of catches in the Wisconsin offense than it was, you know, comparative to, you know, the Ohio State offense, you know, the Florida State offense, you know, the Georgia offense. So, I mean, those receptions that Taylor had this year were significant, him making that jump. And I try not to dock players that are in offenses that just don't inherently throw to running backs anyways, because we've seen that transition to the NFL. That's more of a college scheme thing than it is a guy isn't capable of catching passes, because the majority of receptions you're going to have as an NFL running back aren't the Christian McCaffrey type receptions. They're the tertiary dump offs. So like when Leonard Fournette has a 70 catch season this year, it isn't because Leonard Fournette is
drawing up passing plays for him.
They're checkdowns. They're dump offs, and like that's the majority of the passes these guys are going to catch. We've seen it with a guy like Melvin Gordon, you know, as a one off coming from Wisconsin, not catching passes in college, and then going to a place where the quarterback in the system involves running back in the passing game like Phillip Rivers does, and was fine, caught a bunch of passes. It's not like he was a guy he was lining up and, you know, beating cornerbacks, you know, like Eckler was and was used in that role, but he had significant amount of passing work because that's where he went in the NFL. And those are not a high degree of difficulty to NFL what they ask running backs to do, you know, catch wise. So I don't think it's a knock on Taylor, his overall reception resume, or even really any of these guys. I try not to penalize these guys too much or elevate guys because they played for Washington State, you know.
That happens every year, right? Whatever running back just graduated from Washington State is like, it was James Williams last year. Like, mm-hmm. Oh, this dude caught 80 passes. Like, let's get him in the NFL.
Right. Like, I mean, I try to find balance in that. And I know it's harder to do that. And when you just, you know, from a model input stance, because it's really hard to mask, you know, the system to account for the systems they were in over the raw production. But I try to kind of, you know, go back to that and just understand that the majority of these guys aren't being used that way in the NFL anyway. So I'm not going to, you know, really knock these guys. I mean, you know, the guy from Boston College, AJ Dillon, you know, like, really has no pass catching resume. But you know, if he finds a system that they're going to throw these kind of dump offs to him, I mean, I have to assume a majority of running backs are adequate to enough to get by in that regard. Like we said,
he got so many touches in college, AJ Dillon, like just an absurd amount of touches. I'm actually kind of interesting to see. I'm interested in seeing, you know, what he will do at the combine, because a lot of these guys who played at non, you know, top 25 schools, and then, you know, like it's just kind of hard to say, like, how athletic is that guy? I think a great example is Devin Singletary. A lot of people were really high on him. He was horrible at the combine. A lot of people got lower on him. And it turns out it just doesn't matter when your team gives you the ball a lot, which is what happened. The Bills just started to give him the ball all the time.
I mean, it's going to be tough not to draw, like, the A.J. Dillon, Andre Williams, like, corollary, like, if he's really good at the combine. Like, it's going to be really hard not to, you know, giving the, you know, the Boston College overhype like we do with all the Wisconsin running backs.
Andre Williams currently, fourth string XFL running back, for those who don't remember. Guy caught a pass, like, his first drive in the XFL, and then we're never going to see him again. That was Andre Williams.
Well, I remember his Hall of Fame game stud that kind of
– Oh, man. Yeah. So, okay, important question. Judy or Lamb?
I mean, they're both going to be taking the top 15. I give Lamb things more point to him. I mean, he's got the return game resume, which we know has kind of been like an X factor for running back or wide receiver value and like guys getting drafted. You know, you see guys last year like Deontay Johnson get elevated higher than most models would have him. Mecole Hardman, you know, you think back to guys that hit, you know, Antonio Brown was a guy that cut his teeth as a return man that had a lot of production in college in the return game to go with catches. I mean, Antonio Brown's an interesting case because I think if this type of analysis existed back then, a lot of us would have been on Antonio Brown as a good prospect.
Some of us also probably would have maybe been on Odell Beckham Jr. as a prospect a little bit more than we were before, if this analysis had kind of come to the fore a little bit. And pretty tilting that that analysis did not exist at the time.
Right. And you would think guys like T.Y. Hilton was like a great return man in college and, you know, had this in his back pocket. And then I think also when you just look at last year too, and, you know, Judy had 1,300 yards in the SEC last year, but CeeDee Lamb at 19 years old had 65, 1,111 playing alongside the wide receiver one taken in last year's NFL draft, Marquise Brown. So, I mean, I think there's just a little bit, things just point to him having a little bit of slight edge and objectively in my book. Than it does Judy. But I mean, I would have, like you said, it's a two-man tier. I feel really strongly about both those guys, but I am more side on Lamb. I would like to, I'm curious to see what all these guys weigh in this class, because it's kind of a weird class, and not from the old school like Rotovis stance, like we're looking for these guys to be Julio Jones, but you know, there is still, when you look at the receivers that are productive in the NFL, these guys are all still like in that 190 plus 195 area, like plus. We don't have to have those, you know, like you said, the old school battles of big wide receiver versus small wide receiver. But some of these guys, like if they come in like the 180 range, like to be that productive from a fantasy stance, you have to have a major trump card. Whether you're just like a, you know, like a guy like a Marquise Brown or like a DeSean Jackson, you've got like this huge trump card that you can weigh, or you just have to be like just stupid efficient and not make any sense like Tyler Lockett to come in under like 190 and like be a huge fantasy asset. So I'm curious to see what some of these guys do actually come in and size-wise weigh. We know the height is there for these guys, but I'm real curious to see how they come in and, you know, what kind of muscle these guys have.
Well, it seems like Lamb is going to come in maybe even bigger than he played. There's been, you know, videos around and interviews and stuff. Just like he really over the last year has been working on transforming his body and like his style of running and everything just to get ready for the NFL, basically, which I think is really interesting.
Yeah, I mean, and he's a guy, they both are so good after the catch too, but like I said, he's got that like little bit return game pedigree that gives him a little edge. But if he comes in, yeah, if he comes in just at like 190 plus, like I'll be all in on him, you know, being like a major fantasy asset.
All right, best fantasy running back 3 years from now, Swift, Akers, Taylor, Dobbins.
Like I said, I mean, I guess I want to see the capital invested into Akers by, or no, I think we've got a really good idea. The other three are going to be drafted highly.
Seems like Akers could go in that like David Montgomery, Singletary, mm-hmm. third round range, or some team could take him at 44 or whatever.
But I think the other three have a shot to all even maybe be day one picks. I don't know if we'll see all three.
Imagine taking Jonathan frickin' Taylor in the first round of the NFL draft. I mean, I'll be so tilted.
It's a different conversation, but for us, just from like, because we'll care. Like,
oh, big time.
I mean, because it matters. You look at the end of that first round. Like, I mean, the Chiefs could take one of these guys. I think that the 49ers are a team nobody's talking about because, one, I don't think that John Lynch, like, when you look at where he's invested capital and like where they've signed guys, like, I don't know if John Lynch gets a pass for their like overall record and success, but I think where he's allocated money and like positions he's invested in, I'm not really sure John Lynch is a guy that like for sure gets it yet or gets it to the degree like we would say like, yeah, that dude's one of the sharps. And they've got Tevin Coleman, an expiring deal this year. Matt Breida's a restricted free agency this year. Mostert has low investment. Like, they're a team I could totally see, like, I mean, probably surprising people and maybe at 31 taking one of these guys. Like, you know, it's there. I don't think it's far-fetched to believe that they're a team that could take one of these guys either. And we've kind of seen that's where these running backs have been taken by, you know, in past years by, you know, Seattle taking, jumping in and taking, you know, Penny and the Michelle going at the end of the first round. So, I mean, I don't think that it's far-fetched that we could see like one of these guys go to a really good team too, or a system we believe in that just like breaks the back of fantasies like 101. They're like, oh, I had the 101 and J.K. Dobbins went to the Chiefs. Well, what are you going to do then?
I mean, imagine. So, yeah. Like, what I mentioned this on the episode with Curtis, I think, but I really expected – I just was like, Travis Etienne is going to the Chiefs. He's going to declare. He's going to be drafted in the third round. He's going to the Chiefs, and he's going to break fantasy football, taking over that Damian Williams spot. And, you know, now I don't think that there is as obvious of a scheme fit. But J.K. Dobbins is just like Damian Williams, but like, you know, with draft pedigree, like he'd catch 70 passes a year, and just, I mean, he would wreck fantasy there. If the Chiefs take a running back, whoever they take is going to be just the stone nuts. Like, it's going to be.
Yeah, he'll be the 101 easy. And then Dobbins, I fully expect by, you know, we're doing this on the 20th of February before the combine. Dobbins is a dude I expect to absolutely, like, go nuclear because he's got that Saquon pedigree. Like, everyone knew Saquon was going to go just nuts at the combine. And a couple years ago, you know, Nike does their, like, open combine for, you know, people going into college. And Dobbins was – he was the highest rated – player at the combine, not, like any position. You know, he ran a 4.45 40. He had a 4.19 20 yard shuffle. He had a 42 inch vertical. Jeffrey Okuda was second behind him. Ohio State him getting both of those guys, and Okuda's the guy we'll probably see taking the top five in this draft. But I mean, Dobbins, yeah, when you look at what he did in that combine in 2016 and just kind of as a tease to what he could do next weekend. I mean, I expect him to be the guy that kind of just gets a little bit more separation. Not that I expect Taylor or Swift to have bad combines, but if Dobbins turns in even numbers on par to what he turned in a couple years ago, like he's going to just pop for everybody.
Right. And I mean, that it like, that is I think I don't want to double count that stuff with guys who get drafted early, right? Like, I just, I expect guys that are going to get drafted early to have good combine numbers and to be good athletes. I think where Spark Score and, you know, like, just overall the combine stuff, where you really want to start paying attention to that is making choices between guys who are going to enter the NFL as, you know, practice squad guys, third string running backs, like that. I mean, that's just generally where it's generally where those guys are going to differentiate themselves, right? It's just like they're going to look way better in practice if they're faster, stronger, and you know, just all of that stuff is going to be, you know, indicative of future playing time. So, you know, I probably am not going to make my judgments between Dobbins, Swift, and Taylor based off of like, okay, who's the fastest? It's really just going to be more landing spot, really. Like, I just, I'm looking for a good landing spot for those dudes, really.
Yeah, we're looking for immediate opportunities for a lot of these backs. You know, like we all knew, like with Josh Jacobs coming in, it's the reason why he was the 101. He was going to get handed the keys to, you know, a bunch of touches. And that's what we care about because that's what gets fantasy points. So if any of these guys go to a spot where they're clear number one, it's going to give them an edge over the other guys, kind of where they fall in the pecking order of getting immediate touches.
All right. This is a good one. So back-to-back years in Superflex Dynasty drafts, we've had quarterbacks just being the easy 101. And, you know, that's not always the case. Like, you're not always, like, some years there just is not going to be a breakout quarterback to take 101. But this year, Joe Burrow is going to be the 101 in 90% of Superflex best ball or dynasty drafts. And Kyler Murray was the, you know, universal 101 in those formats last year. So how do you value those two compared to one another?
I mean, I still value Kyler the most. I mean, he's already coming off of, you know, a top 10 fantasy season. We've seen him, you know, have tangible rushing production, and, you know, the arrow's pointing up for what, I mean, I think that, you know, there's a lot of things we can, you know, dump on Cliff for and what Cliff did in year one. But I think that he's shown that, like, he's able to adjust to personnel and what he has personnel wise. And that was a big, like, key to, like, say, like, yeah, this is headed in the right direction. What he was able to do and as a workaround to what he had offensively definitely points the arrow up. Most of my issues with Cliff involve, like, game management stuff and stuff like that, but it does, you know, the scheme and design. I think that what he showed in that area is a big arrow up. So, I mean, I'm all in on Kyler, I mean, for the foreseeable future, you know, whereas Burrow still, we need to see him perform in the NFL. I mean, he's an older, short-term starter, you know, some of those guys have busted out in the past. So, I mean, I don't want to just say he's a complete slam dunk, but, you know, objectively, he looks really phenomenal. Then, you know, is going to a spot where we believe he's going to have actual playmakers, you know, in terms of Joe Mixon, you know, AJ Green and Tyler Boyd. I'm not really stocking any of this, the stance that they're taking that he's not going to show up to Cincinnati or play there. We haven't had that in a long time. Maybe it worked, you know, in the early 2000s.
There's already been rumors of it. There's already been rumors that he doesn't want to play there, that he does not want to be a Cincinnati Bengal, which I think is really funny. It would be hilarious if he was just like, I'm not doing this. What would they even do? I don't even know what team would even, I guess Miami would give up a bunch to go get him, but does he want to play in Miami either?
I mean, I think it's more just like from the area. They know that that organization, how that organization operates. I think that's really what it's about. It's not really about just where the Bengals are now as a franchise. It's the organization. I mean, that whole stink of that organization, how they handle player contracts, and you know how they, you know, just how they just undersell everything, and you know, just kind of play. They're just a thrift store organization, basically. And
yeah,
I think that they
sure,
know. And so they know, like, you know, in, you know, as an agency going in, that you don't want to deal with that organization, and that kind of, you know, that stink that, you know, Mike Brown has put on, you know, his, how he operates an organization. So, I mean, I think that's what it's mostly about, but we haven't seen anyone posture like that since Eli, you know, so.
Yeah.
Maybe we get it again. It happens. But right now I'm treating it as he'll be a Bengal. Joe Burrow will be a Bengal, and he'll, you know, so that's the way I'm handling it. So he would still be the 101 in that regard. What's interesting though, is I think that Tua would be above him if there was no risk.
Yeah. If there was no risk of health, basically.
I mean,
yeah, because Tua's going to run.
Yeah. Everything that we've read though, anything I've read from like report, just said it's a matter of time though. Like it's going to be an issue for Tua at some point in his career, injury.
Really?
So like that.
I haven't really looked into it that much.
Yeah. I mean, we share some links, but in order to reach out, but everything I've read from like every person in the know, and it's medical stuff, it could not happen, but everyone that it says like high probability, like it will be an issue at some point.
Of just
career.
Reoccurrence of
it's
this.
It's just
at some
a
point.
Matter of time, which is a bummer. Cause like I said, I was ready to come in with the hot take of Tua over Burrow for sure, but you can't. It's just too much. If that,
so
there's no risk.
So our next topic is Tua versus like the, you know, the secondary 2018 guys, Baker, Allen, Darnold. Oh, we can even throw Danny Dimes in there as well. So it sounds like for you, you would maybe even have like Josh Allen higher just based off of this, you know, worry about, you know, future reoccurrence or just of future physical limitations.
Yeah, I think it's a concern. And like, and then you have a guy like Josh Allen anyways, like he's got a trump card. I mean, for fantasy, like he can suck.
Cause he can run.
He doesn't have to really grow as a passer. If he's what he was last year as a passer, that is completely adequate to be a QB1 for fantasy. That is a completely adequate bar for him to be. And like, that's all he needs to hit. So, I mean, maybe over some of these other guys that have a little more question marks, like I think that there's still a bust area for Daniel Jones. I think that there's still like an area where like he could, you know, he might not get a second contract. Like that, they could be like Bortles, you know, like we still don't know yet. I'm not ready to say
I mean, he's there.
it's in the realm of possibility.
I mean, he's one of the most turnover prone quarterbacks that the NFL has ever seen.
Yeah.
Like crazy.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's still a chance like when you're lumping him in that area. I'm looking at it now in DLF February ADP. Tua is the QB 14 right behind Daniel Jones and right ahead of Jared Goff. It's like kind of like where you are.
I think I'd rather have Goff.
I would rather have Goff because, like I said, no injury risk, and we've seen Goff actually perform.
And he's tied to a contract that makes him unbenchable. Like even say the Rams wanted to get rid of him, like trading him, like you like no team would trade for him to bench him. He would be traded to start for them. Just
yeah,
like he's starting for the duration of that contract.
But I think I think Darnold even has more safety than a guy like Tua. And it stinks to say, because I think Tua is one of the better prospects on paper that we've had. It's just, I mean, if that – at the quarterback position where we can replace points, if I've got to worry about a guy not maybe getting
– Not playing out his contract, yeah.
That's the advantage you have in Dynasty compared to redraft in these rookie drafts that we're talking about is, you know, Joe Burrow carries a lot of value even in a one QB league because QB1 longevity is a decade plus. Of tangible
production. If Burrow never suffers a super unlucky injury, you just can click and set that guy for the next 10 years of your life.
Yeah, and quarterbacks are playing now, they're approaching 40, like middle relievers in baseball now. Like they're pushing these late 30s without any fall off in production. So, I mean, you're talking about having, you know, 10 plus years of a player that can compete for that being a top player at his position. That holds a lot of weight, you know, and a lot of safety. Whereas you can say a guy might only give you 5 to 7 years. Like I'm just going to take the safety net and give them the edge. Where I know like Darnold's probably going to be a starting quarterback for you know, 12 years in the NFL at age 22 right now. He's already 2 years in. He was the youngest week one starter in NFL history.
Yeah, that's crazy, but it's true. Yeah, it's wild. All right, so if you had the 107 in a regular league or the 109, so where, you know, after that tier, basically, so after Tua, Burrow, and the six guys, what's your strategy with that pick? Because I have this pick in a couple leagues, and then also I've just been thinking of, you know, is there a way to exploit someone having this pick, you know, like way get them to overpay to move up to 104 or whatever in other leagues, you know, kind of what's your strategy if you do not have a tier one prospect available to you?
Yeah, I think it plays out two ways. You have either the guy that's scared he's going to miss out on the top tier and wants to come up, and you take 107 plus a 21, a 2021 pick or more picks in this draft. There's a lot of ways to package and move down. And then the other way to play it is you're at the spot after the perceived cutoff. So you get someone to come up for their flavor of choice, worried that it's yours. You know, it could be Ruggs, it could be Chenault, it could be Akers, it could be whoever. And they're worried that they've got to come to that pick. They've got to jump the line. They might have 110 or 111 where you are comfortable with all those guys. You say, yeah, you know, I feel pretty good about all those players. So I can move down, let you come get your guy, come up four spots. I'm getting plus and adding on. So, I mean, those are like the two ways to play it. Cause it's definitely where the cutoff is. And if your guy isn't the 107 guy that you're just think is clearly the guy, then you would move down and take the extra package, you know, so to speak, and, you know, come get that. And then if you're the guy that's freaking out, which wouldn't be me, I would never be selling to come up like to that degree. So I mean,
I just like how often can you turn a profit trading up in rookie drafts? My guess would be it's got to be like 10% of the time, and it would only, I would also guess it's only moving up to like 101 or 102. There's got to be like zero profit potential in giving up, you know, mm-hmm. a future second to get to 106. That's got to be just like a very anti-mathematical move.
And that's exactly the capacity I operate in. I'm always looking to move down, not up. I'm never looking, just like the real NFL draft. You know, these guys are trading up. Like, you know, I want to be Chris Ballard, man. Give me a bunch more picks. You know, I don't want seventh round picks and fourth round rookie picks, but you know, give me a bunch more picks in the money spot where, you know, I can hit. So yeah.
I don't want to give away any strategy stuff to you because we're in like multiple leagues together, but I gotta say, if you, those of you who are playing in super flex dynasty leagues, trade a veteran wide receiver who you like but don't love for a mid second round pick, and then just earmark that pick for Jalen Hurts. Get draft Jalen Hurts in every rookie draft that you're in. If he sucks, if he never starts, whatever, that's fine. You cut him, you move on. You're going to draft mm-hmm. a ton of second round rookies that never work out. But if Jalen gets to start anywhere as a rookie, second, it just doesn't matter. If he ever starts, he is going to be so valuable because they're going to run whatever team drafts him. Assuming it's a smart team, they're going to run him like Lamar, basically. They're going to be like, you are going to carry the ball 150 times a year, and that's just how you're going to get used. And I'm very much looking forward to seeing where he gets drafted. I think he's going to be like a third round pick in the NFL draft.
Yeah, I would agree. I think that, you know, obviously having Lamar now opened the kind of floodgates of where he went to an organization that was willing to go all in on him, the player.
Right.
Not, you know, make him, not acquiesce him to scheme. They built around the player. What a novel concept.
Crazy stuff, right?
But yeah, Hurts is in that bucket. And, you know, Hurts is a guy that showed systematically too that he can at least perform at a, you know, passing the ball too.
And he can adjust. He played in I mean, compare a Nick Saban offense to a Lincoln Riley offense, and the fact that Jalen learned both of those offenses in a year, like that's very impressive.
Yeah, I mean, how crazy is it that so now my college database of prospects coming in the NFL, the top three since 1999, the top three quarterbacks in yards per attempt entering the NFL are now Jalen Hurts, Kyler Murray, and Baker Mayfield. The last 3 years,
You love to see it.
there speaks to something that Lincoln's got cooking there. You know, guys coming into the NFL And yeah, I mean, I'm with you though, because Hurts, because like, you know, that's my brand anyways for quarterbacks. It's an exploitable market that people are starting to catch on to now, because last year basically was the year of the Konami quarterback. This past season, like every quarterback that was functional for fantasy ran. You know, even Mahomes at the end of the year was running weekly. And in the playoffs, you think about that playoff run, Mahomes was running for 50 yards every game.
Yep.
You know, and scrambling around and adding to his production that way. So when you get those guys that have those just mega passing years, and Lamar did have one of those years this year. I mean, he didn't have the yardage, but when you have a guy throw 36 touchdown passes and tack on all that rushing production, like, you can't beat that guy in fantasy. We saw it the year Cam went nuts a couple years ago and was the MVP. Those guys are just major, major haymakers and just, you know, major spades to play weekly in your lineup. Those guys win weeks. And Jalen Hurts can be one of those guys if he goes to
absolutely
that's willing to lean into him instead of, you know, make him try to be something.
Yeah, and just like Jake Fromm, Jacob Eason, Jordan Love, these they'll never be that. They just
yeah,
they
I would
won't
never
ever
take
be
any
that
of those guys over Jalen Hurts.
Even
the fantasy
if
the upside isn't there.
I mean, even if all of them have more upside to be starting NFL quarterbacks, which I think is arguable anyways, certainly there are people that think that way, that believe that those guys have. But just the most that Jake Fromm would ever be would be Andy Dalton, right? Like, there's no real path to him being a quarterback one in Dynasty ever, really.
Yeah, I mean, I even one take hotter. I think a team taking Hurts in like the third round would be better off to have a better window than taking Herbert in the top 10.
I mean, Herbert is not going to be a good NFL quarterback. It's just not going to happen.
I mean, I don't know anything about QB scouting and really anybody. Like, I
he
know
looked,
like,
every time I watched him, he looked bad. He just looked bad. It's just like, what are you doing, dude?
Well, and Herbert to me, like, he has the profile of a guy that like would consistently like hoodwink scouts. I mean, he does everything. He's a young guy. That's been a like lead quarterback.
Winner.
For his whole
life. He's a winner.
And I imagine that dude looks really good in shorts. He practices really well. He does all the things in practice.
Says all the right things. He can be like, oh, the safety. The like he'll speak. Oh, you know what? I bet he's really good at. No coaches and scouts love this when a quarterback starts to speak in your offensive terminology instead of whatever the offense they played in college was. So like. And this is a really dumb thing about football anyways, that all these different offenses called the same thing by different names. But yeah. This must be a trick that like that these quarterback prospects are taught, that that like when you're interviewing with a team, when you're talking with a scout, you should start to parrot things that they are saying to you. Cause like every scout ever will talk about how quarterbacks will do that. And I bet Herbert's really good at that.
Yeah, I mean, I see him as the type of guy to like rope these guys in, man.
Yeah.
But he does not pop for me at all, like at any level.
I mean, it's,
and I don't know
I mean,
anything
he's...
either, though. I also don't know anything, but
yeah, I mean, none of us know anything, right? None of us know anything about anything. But I'm out on Herbert. I won't be taking shots on him. I don't foresee a tremendous future for him. Like I think. He's just okay. I have no interest in.
Well, he's gonna get drafted in the real draft in a spot that's gonna elevate his superflex capital. Like he's gonna end up being a first round superflex pick because he's gonna be drafted in a spot where he's probably gonna be a year one starter, or that you could probably pencil him in to get tangible year one starts.
He won't be a first round dynasty, a superflex dynasty pick for me. No, not now, not never. Not my Herbert, not my problem. Okay. I just recently took over this orphan dynasty team for in the FFPC at one of the $77 teams, and I mean the roster's horrible. And the one guy I have who is a huge trade chip is AJ Brown, and I actually think he is a uniquely difficult prospect to evaluate for dynasty because he had a mega efficient rookie season, looked great doing it. But, you know, kind of unlike Cortland Sutton, kind of unlike some of these other young wide receivers, he didn't do it on volume, and the team doesn't seem to believe that he is a building block. Like, the Broncos are like, Cortland Sutton, that's our dude. We are throwing him bombs. We're trading away other pass catchers. We are going to make him our dude. I like, don't really get that vibe from Tennessee. I think that they, even after the Tannehill stuff and getting blown out by the Chiefs, I still think that they don't want to throw the ball that much.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the problem with a lot of these rookie wide receivers that popped in general. I mean, DK Metcalf, Debo Samuel, these guys are on run-first organizations. Their elevation in fantasy that they're getting this year one, I think they all still come with volume concerns. I mean, I still obviously like a lot of those guys, and I really like AJ Brown. I mean, he was a prospect that really showed last year that he was objectively a wide receiver one or two, depending if you had him or Harry, and he just smoked Harry year one. And like you said, though, he just did it, less on volume. And he also did it against, he had spike weeks against terrible teams. He had no good games versus, really good defenses, which I think probably speaks more to his offense in general than it does him. But he was the eighth rookie wide receiver to have 1,000 yards in the past decade. If you look at the other guys that did that, these guys all were pretty good. Michael Thomas, Amari Cooper, Odell Beckham, good player. Mike Evans, Keenan Allen, AJ Green, and the one dud that pulled everyone in was Calvin Benjamin, and he only did it because he had 145 targets. He had the fewest amount of yards than all those eight guys that had 1,000 yards, and he had by far the most targets. AJ Brown did it on 84 targets. I mean, anytime you buy that type of efficiency, it's not me fading AJ Brown's efficiency, it's me fading Ryan Tannehill's efficiency. I don't think Ryan Tannehill's efficiency, I don't think that's the real Ryan Tannehill. I don't think that touchdown rate that Ryan Tannehill had is real. And like you said,
single thing about what the Titans did last year is real at all. And I made this trade that was universally panned. No one I talked to thought I did the right thing. But in this dynasty league that we are in, Scott Barrett's league, I traded away Tannehill. At his peak, when he was crushing, I traded him away for the 7 years younger Mitch Trubisky, who runs a little bit. And everyone's like, Davis, you're an idiot. Tannehill is for real, whatever. I'm pretty sure I won that trade. I'm pretty sure I won this trade.
I don't like trades like this because I call it musical chair trades where you're just trading.
Yeah, it is like the same thing. It is like the same thing.
They're not my favorite kind of trades to make, but I get why you did it, and I think I would bet on your side more. My thing is I would have used Tannehill at his apex to probably buy a better piece that I believe did more than Mitchell Trubisky, but I understand why you did it, and I would take your side in a vacuum over that.
Should have asked for more, though. Should have gotten some fab bucks or something. I don't know. It's not like the best trade I've ever made in my life. I just really don't want to be associated with Ryan Tannehill. I can't. I really don't. I'm not a fan.
I understand that. But like I said, I typically hate it where you just have to make a trade and just rely on your player eval because none of us consistently get player evals right enough to justify like that type of stuff. I mean, eventually we do take stances on players and we do that in rankings and everything else. But I typically don't like making those kinds of trades because those are the types of trades I think I bust out on more than otherwise.
I guess the big question is
I think you trade him.
Yeah. Yeah. I
don't think he's a sell for everyone, but I think your situation where he's
going I gotta to trade 12. Him. I just I don't know what I can I would like a running back who is fine, not good but fine, James White and a first. And it seems like people don't want to pay it. I've sent out a bunch of offers and it just seems like people don't want. And maybe it's because it's February and people just they're not thinking about that stuff yet. They haven't had to set a lineup or anything, whatever. And they look at their roster and they're like, oh, my roster's fine. But it seems like people are not as into AJ Brown as they were when he was, four targets, 100 yards every week, just breaking stuff.
Yeah, I think the playoffs took a little bit of that shot. Because going into the playoffs, he had that buzz where he had those monster weeks, and you kind of seen in the playoffs when they played better teams, and you seen what that offense was about. I mean, he did nothing in those three games. So, I mean, I think people saw that, and that floor was a little bit, a little more cognizant in people's back of their minds. But he's still going really high. I think, like you said, I think his dynasty price, market price is still fair and probably an area where I'm going to have him. But I think his 2020 redraft value is probably going to be oversold.
Oh, wait. Yeah, I won't be. I will have none, probably. Seems likely. Okay, here's a good question. How many games does Marcus Mariota start at quarterback in 2020?
I mean, I would say zero.
Yeah.
I don't think he's going to get signed as a starter, but I mean, we're in an era now where, so this past year, 57 different
quarterbacks. It was crazy. Yes.
Started a game. It was the most since 2010. But it was also the seventh year in a row where we've had more than 50 quarterbacks start the season. So it's like not like there's a lot more injuries and a lot more rollover than we think. So I don't think he's going to get signed as a starter anywhere. But I mean, if he does start and like goes to spot like a similar situation like Tannehill, you know, obviously, I mean, I would love to see him just go be Kyler's backup. Just go be Kyler's backup.
Yeah, like, that would be cool. That would be cool. And I think that would actually be like a cool ending to his story. Which, because like I love Marcus Mariota, it kind of got buried because he played for, I mean, the Titans are to me the most boring team in professional sports. They don't do it. They suck, and they took his light away, dude. They took his joy away, and it would be cool to see him go somewhere where there's like, you know, people who want to score points.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he was a guy that I think that just everyone thought was like even his floor was going to be a success. And for him to kind of bottom out the way it did, it was kind of surprising to a lot of people. Even if you didn't like Marcus Mariota even coming in, like I think a lot of people still thought it was like almost like an Amari Cooper prospect situation. You're like, this dude may not be like the alpha of alphas.
Too big
like,
to fail.
But he's going to be solid. And like to see him bottom out the way he did, to lose to Ryan Tannehill and just completely get outplayed, I think it is a surprise the way it all ended. And I think a lot of people would love to see him get a second chance. I don't think he gets signed to be a starter anywhere. But if he does end up starting or ends up a situation where he takes over an incumbent, like maybe a Mitchell Trubisky, maybe he goes to Chicago.
So something I would advise people to do, and I this is do as I say, not as I did. Because like last year, I mean, I've been in dynasty leagues for a decade, but last year I started adding more and more leagues, and especially these super flex formats. And I think something that is really undervalued, especially as you mentioned, you know, all of these different quarterbacks saw starts, is trading for talented quarterbacks under the age of 30 who are not starting right now. So Tyrod Taylor, Teddy Bridgewater, like these guys in startups last year were going 18th, 19th, 20th round of super flex leagues, right? And it's like you're at that point, you're looking at, okay, am I taking Marquise Lee or Tyrod Taylor? You know, right. And it's just like with one injury, Tyrod Taylor immediately becomes a starter for you, immediately becomes worth a second round pick. And there's just not really a scenario where whoever, you know, whatever, you know, veteran player you're taking in that round, they're not going to do it for you. So in startups this offseason, that's going to be something I'm going to try and leave every draft with, you know, two of these younger quarterbacks who I think have talent in the future that just are not starting right now.
Yeah, you have to remember in Superflex and 2QB leagues that quarterbacks are a legitimate currency.
Currency, yeah.
I mean, like legitimate currency.
Derek Carr for a 2020 first.
I mean, I've now been playing in these leagues that you joined one, that Ryan McDowell's run, these Superflex leagues, and, you know, I try to dodge a different
strategy. I'm nervous about this league, dude, the kitchen
literally
sink.
Literally know that, like, I've seen it now happen so many times with those guys. Like, quarterbacks are a legit value. They're a commodity currency that you can use. So, I mean, you definitely want to go that route and soak up as much bench spots over and use these guys that are the, you know, QB2s on their teams instead of, like, these wide receiver 4 or 5 guys that are just never going to carry weight in the fantasy season for you.
Right. Okay, so last thing I want to talk about before we get out of here is the 2019 rookie running back class. Not a particularly strong class. You know, Jacobs had a good, not great year. Wasn't really used as a pass catcher the way we expected him to. You know, that was what he did in college that people were like, okay, maybe this guy is worth, you know, a valuable pick. And they just used Jalen Richard instead. David Montgomery, I mean, people can say whatever they want. He was disappointing. He played bad. He looked bad. The Bears were bad. Now, maybe he has the best volume projection of these guys going forward because they really have nothing else behind him, but I think you have to be disappointed with the season he had. The only guy who I think beat his projections, I mean, Singletary at the end of the year, but Miles Sanders he's a first-round pick in Dynasty drafts right now.
I just got him in a startup that's a dispersal. I just got Miles Sanders, and Jacobs was in this dispersal as well, and I – paid more for Sanders than Jacobs went for. I mean, I have him ranked higher in Dynasty. He scored more fantasy points than him this year in a partial season, basically. And, you know, Jacobs played fewer games, but, you know, Sanders also had, you know, just uneven usage. And then at the end of the year, they really everyone is worried about the committee thing with Sanders, and they kind of showed at the end of the year that when
Howard really came back and they just didn't play him.
I mean, they still played Boston Scott some. But that's the NFL
now.
Shout
out Boston Scott.
There's always going to be a secondary running back now in the NFL. Always. It's just not a situation now like where a lot of these guys get 90% of touches
like
Christian
McCaffrey. Yeah, like Leonard Fournette's the only one.
I mean, it's just very rare. There's always going to be a secondary guy. But, I mean, I like Sanders more going forward. I had him higher. You know, my evaluation last year was that he was better. So, I mean, I'm kind of just sticking to it. I didn't really come off of that year one. But obviously Jacobs moved up as well too. He was a better performer than I thought that he would be for fantasy, even with passing game limitations. So, I mean, he was a nice surprise, and the rest of the class is just
– that's funny because I was bummed out on Jacobs because I was super high on him. I was like, this guy's going to get 220 carries, 50 catches. Like, I thought he was going to smash, and he did better than I thought as a runner, but I was really bummed out to see – like, not only were they using Jalen Richard, but they were using DeAndre Washington as a pass catcher instead of him, which I just felt weird to me.
Yeah, I mean, all it takes for that is the flip, though. Like, I mean, because if, you know, like we talked about earlier with the guys, just all he has to do is
It's just volume. It's not ability.
All he has to do is get the targets. And, like, if that – and, like, a lot of us were going to do this all offseason when we talked about Josh Jacobs coming this year. Like, I think it's super fragile to project him with the same – even with them bringing Richard back. I think it is fragile to still just give him, you know, a 10% target share. Like, it's like, because if he smokes that, you're going to look really dumb.
Right.
Like, it's going to look terrible. If you're going to say, I'm going to fade him because the targets at his ADP, and you know, granted, if there's a guy that has locked-in targets, you're going to take him over him, like we said, a Miles Sanders. But if he gets to 14% of the targets, you know, it's going to break. He's good because if he gets that kind of rushing volume again, he was a missed tackle machine. I mean, no one forced more missed tackles than that dude. And that's what that's what everyone thought David Montgomery was going to be. Everyone's like, David Montgomery, the missed tackle savant, and you know, those Josh Jacobs that came in the league. And
dude, I don't buy into those stats year over year at all. Yeah, it's tough. It just tilts me so hard.
And Jacobs' offensive line is really good too. Like I believe in the Raiders' offensive line, like being stable as well. So, I mean, I don't know. It's one of those things, but I just think it's fragile to say like because we know he can catch. It's just opportunity. It's really just opportunity and him getting the opportunity to catch the ball. A coach can only trot out Jalen Richard so many times, man, before.
They just gave him a freaking contract extension, dude.
I know, but it's not like anything tangible. We'll see. Yeah. I don't know. I just think it's fragile. I'm high on him still moving forward. I don't think it was – I think it was more positive. But the guy that caught all the passes, Leonard Fournette, is probably the guy to have more worry about that in their other regard because those can just be taken away.
Yeah, and I got in this big argument with Nate Liss from Breakout Finder. I went on their podcast the other day, and Nate loves Fournette, and I was like, "Well, just what happens if they just throw 30 of those passes to Rykel Armstead instead? Then all of a sudden you're just
Chris Thompson.
Yeah, or James. It just doesn't matter. James, what like you know? Those are the easiest, most replaceable plays in pro football." And they can just vanish overnight if a coach changes his mind, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's too easy to kind of connect the dots to Chris Thompson to the Jaguars after he cried when Jay Gruden got fired and is a free agent. And, like, that team kind of has a need for a receiving running back that's going to play 8 games.
Yeah. okay, I actually – no, this is the last thing we should talk about. What is the right thing to do with Leonard Fournette in Dynasty right now?
Oh, you absolutely sell him. I mean, it's because he was a complete buy. He was a complete buy last year and a complete sell this year. I think it's because you got the healthy season from him, which was the biggest concern, like the biggest the workload season you got from. It just didn't work out. But you increased your value. If you traded for Leonard Fournette and bought him last year, you increased value.
Oh, yeah. He 2X'd his value, maybe more.
So now you can use that increased value and you profit again. Now you double your profit and you don't have to worry about now do I have to worry about the injury concern. And plus because you have the trump card to sell now because you just say, hey, man, touchdown regression. That's
touchdown
your sell card.
Yeah.
Touchdown. Because everyone's going to scream it from the mountaintops. And absolutely, you scored 3 touchdowns and 340 touches. It was the 5th most touches in NFL season with 3 or fewer touchdowns. And you looked at everyone that was below him. They all bounced back and had touchdown spikes. But like you said, do we just trade a touchdown spike for Leonard Fournette now where he jumps to 7 to 10 touchdowns, but now he loses 30 receptions?
No, it's like so much more likely to me that he's like out of the league in 2 years than it is that he like crushes.
I mean, I'm not going to go that far, but I mean, you take all your risk now that you get increase in profit, and then you mitigate your risk and you just profit again. You profited once, you profit again. You keep flipping profit. To me, that's the easy play, the obvious play for him. If you can sell him for, you know, market value and someone, you know, competing and wants to buy in that touchdown regression and that touch value. Because there's a lot of question marks. You know, you're getting the offensive scheme change. Are they going to pick up his fifth-year option? Is he going to be using the passing game? And then also, don't forget, like, he died in fantasy last year when they just weren't competitive. Right. You look at the end of the season, he was the RB20 or higher in just one of his final seven games after he had just one of the best, safest floors, even without touchdowns, through his first eight games. And the Jaguars, I project, and I think a lot of people project, to be terrible. They've already kind of they've lost now all these guys on defense. They're gonna get rid of Boye, it looks like. They don't have that edge defensively. The offensive line looks trash. We don't know what the answer is at quarterback. We don't know what kind of scheme they're on. So I mean, like, I would take the under probably on like them. If you're projecting me for the Jaguars to be good or bad, I'm gonna say they look pretty bad on paper, which is a problem because, like I said, even his season in totality was an RB1 season, but he was not an RB1.
He had some miserable games in there.
He was not an RB1 the back half of the season on a weekly basis. So I mean, if you can sell those things, I mean, I think you just double your, like I said, you profited last year, you profit again.
Yeah. All right. Everyone, follow my boy at Lord Reeves on Twitter. Go and check out his work over on sharpfootball.com. We will continue to bring in the best and the brightest in the industry on this show on a weekly basis. You know, if you guys have any questions about Superflex leagues that we've been talking about, you know, you want to start one, you want to get your buddies together, whatever. I love them. I'm more than happy to talk shop about them. You guys, my DMs are open. You guys can get at me anytime, and we will be back next week.